bringing you the truth behind the news. Welcome to the New American.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Paul Dragoo. We're glad you've joined us. The left is having a fit over recent developments in the Trump documents and Fannie Willis cases. For them, justice prevails only when things go their deranged and corrupt ways. Also, after we discuss today's stories, we're going to have a conversation about what patriotic Americans from coast to coast can be doing to ensure as best as possible that we can keep our republic. We have all that coming up. But first, the gloves came off on Capitol Hill Wednesday as fireworks exploded when Tony Bobulinski testified before the House Oversight Committee. The committee is investigating Hunter Biden's foreign business dealings as part of the impeachment inquiry against his father, Joe Biden. Bobulinski was Hunter Biden's business partner. In his testimony, Bobulinski pulled no punches. He called Democrat committee members Dan Goldman and Jamie Raskin liars.
Rep. Dan Goldman and Jamie Raskin, both lawyers, and Mr. Goldman, a former prosecutor with the SDNY from New York, will continue to lie today in this hearing and then go straight to the media to tell more lies. Hunter Biden's defense attorney, Abby Lowell, weaponizes letters to Congress to try to smear my name
Mr.
and
Chairman.
Misstate the cold hard facts.
Mr. Chairman.
In an attempt to save his powerfully connected client Wait. And his father. I challenge Mr. Lowell to make those claims on national television so he can be held accountable for his lies. Prior to my successful business career, I was an officer in the United States Navy. At Navy's elite Naval Nuclear Power Training Command, I later served as the command's chief technology officer.
Please proceed. I apologize for the disruption from the...
Okay. Am I supposed to say it's my time, Mr. Raskin?
Yeah. But please, Mr. Bobulinski, please.
Okay.
Come to order. Mr. Bobulinski, please proceed.
Okay.
Please proceed. I apologize for the disruption from the minority.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, save his time, but he called members of this committee liars, and I just want to know whether the order and decorum requirements of House Rule 11 apply to witnesses appearing before the committee.
Oh, they don't like it when you tell it like it is. Nevertheless, Bobulinski continued his testimony, insisting that Joe Biden committed high crimes and misdemeanors. Here's what he said when asked why he believes this.
No. You personally, do you believe he should be impeached?
I do.
Okay, and you believe that because you believe Chairman Comer has proven that he committed a high crime and misdemeanor.
No, because I know that he committed high crimes and misdemeanors.
Okay.
I was involved and saw them happen.
And what's a hearing about corruption at the highest level without one of the most inept, ignorant, and unqualified people in Congress? Here's committee member Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez challenging Bobulinski's grasp of constitutional law.
Mr. Bobulinski, I heard your opening statement. It's submitted to the record, part of our proceedings. I have a quick question. Simple. Is it your testimony today that you personally witnessed President Joe Biden commit a crime?
I believe the fact that he was sitting with me while I was putting together a business deal.
Did you witness the president commit a crime? Is it your testimony today?
Yes.
And what crime do you have you witnessed?
How much time do I have to go through it?
It is simple. You name the crime. Did you watch him steal something?
Corruption statutes, RICO and conspiracy.
What is it? What is the crime, sir?
Specifically. You asked me to answer the question. I answered the question.
No.
RICO, you're obviously not familiar with. Corruption
Excuse
statutes.
Me, sir. Excuse me, sir. Excuse me, sir. RICO is not a crime. It is a category. What is
know.
The
It's a category
crime?
Of crimes that you're then charged
You
under
have charges.
A long hundred
You have charges. Statutes. Sir, yeah. please
you want me to name the exact statute
sir?
Under RICO?
Yes.
Oh, well, it's funny. In this committee room, everyone's not here. There's over 18
All right, sir. I reclaim my
lawyers
time.
That
I
went to law school.
I reclaim my time.
I'll
reclaim
leave it
my
up
time.
To you guys
okay,
to
thank
define
you,
the
sir.
Statute
I reclaim my time.
RICO.
AOC says the Republican majority has failed to come up with any actual high crimes and misdemeanors to level against Joe Biden. But according to committee chairman James Comer, the scam is simple. It's done over and over again. The Biden family promises Joe's power. Joe Biden shows up and millions of dollars come into the Biden's pockets. There's probably more fireworks coming soon. Comer wants the big guy to testify. And yesterday he tweeted this. In the coming days, I will invite President Joe Biden to the House Oversight Committee to provide his own testimony and explain why his family received tens of millions of dollars from foreign companies with his assistance. So join me to discuss today's story. He's editor-in-chief of the New American Magazine. I almost forgot the name of our magazine there, Gary Benoit, and executive senior editor, Steve Bonta.
Hello, Paul.
Welcome, gentlemen. Wow. Where do we begin with that? I can't imagine that. What do you imagine it would be if they get Joe Biden there? I imagine one of two ways of going. He's either going to forget everything, although they'll pump him up full of amphetamines and he'll just yell at everyone. But other than that, I'm going to go to you, Gary, first. What is your take from what we just saw?
Well, I think it probably would be a circus, don't you, Paul? But you know, there is really, really good news here. First of all, it's hard to believe that Biden would show up to begin with,
right?
Because he would look so bad. But I would say that the Republicans are this committee, the people who are investigating the crimes of the Biden family syndicate,
yeah,
that they must be over the target, because look at the flack they're getting.
Well,
that wouldn't be happening, would it, if they weren't over the target? And of course, the media would like one to believe, well, this person says this and that person says that. And
yeah.
Who do you believe? But that's not the case at all, because they have the bills, so to speak. They have the bank records.
Well, not according to the Democrats.
Well, they do. They have that information. And so they know that there were, I believe, at least 20 shell companies that were created by the family of the Biden family for the purpose of laundering money.
Yeah.
They know that
they
at
have
least
the receipts,
20,
like you said.
They have the receipts. They know that there were at least $24 million that were transferred.
Uh-huh.
So that, you know, they have all that information. So it's more than just the witness accounts.
Well, I imagine, and I don't know if that AOC interaction there with Bob Alinsky's gone viral, but I imagine that's the kind of thing they would use again. So what do you think, Steve?
Well, so this begs the question, given that the evidence is so transparent and obvious and, you know, and frankly abundant in the form of bank records and emails and texts and on and on and on, that even a character like AOC surely recognizes that the case is compelling. Their position is, well, you haven't proven any high crimes or misdemeanors. What does that tell us? Okay, and of course, they all know what's happening. Every one of them, including AOC, are perfectly well aware Biden was influenced trafficking. And by which I mean Joe Biden,
yes.
You know, the big guy. He was influenced trafficking. He made millions of dollars personally for trafficking influence while he was a vice president, probably while he was a senator,
and
subsequent to that. So why aren't they concerned? And the answer is equally blindingly obvious, because many of them, especially, although not exclusively, on the Democratic side of the aisle, have been doing the same kind of thing. And they're afraid that if they assent or concede in any way, shape, or form, to any degree, that there's criminality in this conduct, then down the road, it may come back to bite them personally when their own peccadilloes are exposed, when their own influence peddling with the likes of the Chinese Communist Party and Russia and Ukraine and who knows where else,
yeah.
You know, the Palestine, you know, Gaza and so forth, and so forth. When these come to light, that they could be similarly prosecuted. In other words, they're saying, well, we're all corrupt too, but this is the way things are done, and we certainly don't want to criminalize the way things are done.
Is that the way you see it? Like,
absolutely.
They're saying it's not a crime because we're doing it too.
Well, they're not saying that. I'm imputing
that's what
motives
implying.
To them.
Yeah.
So you know, it wouldn't hold up in a court of law without evidence, obviously, but this isn't a court of law.
Right.
It's very clear to me, at any rate, what's going on.
Mm.
You know, they're just indignant that Biden got caught, and they know that if he gets impeached or worse, you know, removed from office, sent to prison or whatever, that they will be next if their own misdeeds are uncovered. It's very simple.
But certainly that does not apply to Trump, does it? Because with Trump, they view him as the devil incarnate. And, oh, my goodness, they have to fine him hundreds of millions of dollars because of the fact that he allegedly overvalued his properties. Even though there were no victims, no one was hurt, he paid back the loans.
Right.
My goodness, he's the devil incarnate. But you know, the Biden family, despite all the evidence, they're viewed as perfect angels.
Well, I mean, and regarding that, even Kevin O'Leary from like Shark Tank said, this is ridiculous. They all do that. I mean, speaking of overvaluing and things like that, we're going to continue this conversation afterwards. And then we're going to look at what else is triggering the armchair judges on the left. If we aren't self-reliant, we aren't free. And if we can't take care of ourselves without the so-called help of government, how much liberty do we really have? That's why the New American Magazine has released a special collector's edition bookazine on this very important topic. It's called Self-Reliance, Foundation of Freedom. America has a rich tradition as being the home of staunchly independent explorers, religious dissidents, and general malcontents who seek to live the way humans are intended to, free. It's time to get back to those roots, and living an independent life is key. In our latest special edition, we cover a number of self-reliance-related topics, including the self-sufficiency of the Founding Fathers, self-reliance lessons from COVID, preparing for a worst-case scenario, financial independence, and the importance of community, among many other important topics. The writers are experts in their fields, and they provide a handy guide to get you started. So go to thenewamerican.com/shop and order your copy. Heck, get two. One for you, another for someone you care about. But even better, for $5 more, you can get our entire collector's edition packet, which in addition to the one on self-reliance, includes Trump World and The Great Reset. Again, visit thenewamerican.com/shop, or you can even order by phone at 920-749-3780 Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 p.m. Central Time. That's 920-749-3780. All right, we're back, folks. I wanted to mention that one of the things that the left will likely use, if they're not already doing so, against the Republicans in this case would be the fact that they actually didn't vote or to bring Joe Biden in or to level, I guess, articles of impeachment. I mean, I know I'm kind of butchering this, but something to that degree. What do you guys make of that?
That's proper. I mean, the whole notion of immunity that we obviously talk about in connection with Trump and executive privilege and all this sort of thing does apply to Biden as well. So, mm-hmm. so, as Washington once said, I can't compel you members of Congress to do anything because you're a separate branch of government and you can't compel me either. And I think in the spirit of that what they've said is that they're planning to invite Biden to the House, but they certainly wouldn't if he says, no, I'm not coming, you can stick it. They're not going to charge him with contempt of Congress or anything like that. So, I think it's unlikely that Biden would accept such an invitation.
Yeah, I don't see what he would have to gain. So it sounds like there's probably almost zero chance of getting him on there. You had also something else interesting to say, Steve, and that being that they're just saying high crimes and misdemeanors, but the actual charge is more than that.
Well, again, nothing in politics, including rhetorical choices, happen by accident. And the Democrats have been, and they're, of course, they're myrmidons in the mainstream media, have been repeating over and over, this doesn't rise to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors.
Yes,
and
they're
high crimes and misdemeanors, high crimes and misdemeanors.
Yeah, yeah.
It has to be high crimes and misdemeanors. Of course, that's taken out of context, as these sorts of contentions usually are. The full phraseology from the U.S. Constitution in defining the basis for impeachment of a president, and by extension, any other executive officials, is treason, bribery, and other high crimes or other high crimes and misdemeanors.
Yeah.
But treason and bribery are enumerated first.
Mm.
And they know already, because as we said in the last segment, they already know perfectly well what's going on here. Quid pro quo, influence peddling, call it what you will, it's bribery.
Right.
Is bribery by any other
name? Is it treason?
And they would look really stupid if they came in and said, there's no proof of bribery. There's no proof of bribery. For that matter, treason. You know, when you're talking about trafficking with foreign enemies.
Yeah,
that's
what I would think.
You got to assume this has had an influence on U.S. policy.
They clearly don't want people thinking about that.
How could it not? Because that's the whole purpose for using the Joe Biden brand, is it not?
Yeah, yeah.
The fact that he viewed Biden as Joe Biden, or they viewed Joe Biden as somebody of influence.
Yep.
Yeah. So they
don't want people associating any of this with either the word treason or the word bribery, because the connection's pretty clear.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you guys brought that up. So we'll definitely keep an eye on this, but it sounds like we're all skeptical that we would ever be so fortunate to see Joe Biden testify. I mean, like I said, I don't see anything they'd have to gain.
Well, the Senate has made it clear that they're not even going to follow through on the impeachment of Mayorkas at this point.
Oh, yeah.
They're flat out refusing, and that is a clear violation of the Constitution.
Right. Is it?
I would say it's unprecedented, but many unprecedented things are happening these days. And also with regard to Joe Biden as to whether or not he actually says, okay, I'm willing to testify, although I can't imagine that.
Yeah.
How about his son, Hunter Biden? Now, he did testify behind closed doors, but he was unhappy about that. And he said he wanted to testify where the testimony would be public.
Yeah.
They invited him, Paul, to this very hearing, and he didn't show
to
up.
To testify?
To testify.
Yeah.
And that's he didn't come.
That would have been public, so I guess he's lying about that.
And I think it's reasonable to say he didn't come because he would have looked very bad being confronted by witnesses who were witnesses to his crimes.
Yeah. Well, Bob Alinsky seems pretty convinced, and kudos to him, man. You know. All right, so we're going to look at our next story. On Monday, a judge did something that may bode well for Donald Trump. Federal Judge Eileen Cannon ordered lawyers involved in the classified documents case to submit instruction for a trial jury that would make the Presidential Records Act a central feature of the trial. This is something Trump's persecutors really want to avoid. The Presidential Records Act is a major legal source of doctrine of presidential immunity. But Jack Smith and his team insist that it has no bearing on this case. Judge Cannon, a Trump appointee serving on the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Florida, sees it different. And her order has triggered hysteria among the anti-Trumpers in the mainstream media and the Beltway Guild. MSNBC pundits have warned that the nonsensical immunity claim and Cannon's guidelines for jury instructions may end up guaranteeing a win for Trump. Here are a couple MSNBC commentators throwing a fit.
What she did today is so nutty and so against a point that Bradley's been making, which is that the 11th Circuit has actually already decided this issue, and what she has proposed is against what the 11th Circuit has already reversed her on. I really think, you know, to the extent that you think that she is engaging in partisanship, which I do, there really has to be a time that you take her up on and you do this mandamus to get to the 11th Circuit before she gets to trial, because that's when she has the unilateral ability to throw this case out and it cannot be appealed.
These deep state desperados argue that Judge Cannon is so obviously biased in favor of Trump that a higher court, in this case the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, should issue a writ of mandamus, which would compel her to take the kind of action her legal superiors want her to. They want this to happen before her actions endanger Jack Smith's righteous crusade against Trump and dismisses the case altogether. Meanwhile, the Fannie Willis scandal down in Fulton County, Georgia, just took another unexpected turn. The same Judge McAfee who let Willis off the hook the other day, despite plenty of evidence and corruption and criminal conduct, including perjury, has decided to hedge his bets by allowing Trump and his co-defendants the opportunity to appeal his ruling.
So just hours ago, Fulton County Superior Court Judge Scott McAfee ruled that he will allow an appeal of his own decision. Remember, last week he ruled that DA Fannie Willis can remain on the election interference case against the former president and his allies if Special Prosecutor Nathan Wade got off the case, and shortly after, Wade resigned. Well, since that time, the president's lead Georgia attorney filed a motion to appeal the decision to allow Ms. Willis to stay. That legal team and lawyers for eight other defendants asked again for Ms. Willis to be removed and for the charges to be dropped, calling for an appeal of McAfee's decision. Well, Judge McAfee granted that request today. Mr. Trump's attorney released a statement saying in part, quote, the defense is optimistic that appellate review will lead to the case being dismissed and the DA being disqualified.
With this judge up for re-election, the political motive here is to have plausible deniability on both sides of the issue. His original slap on the wrist for Fannie made him look good to her many supporters in the county, but this latest move allows him credibility with rational human beings, including Georgia legislators as well as constituents, who see this for what it truly is, blatant political favoritism on behalf of his former boss. All right, Steve, I know you've been watching this. We're all watching this. Did you expect this?
No, it was an interesting twist. I mean, I have to admit, I didn't see this. Referring to the Fulton County part, there are actually two stories.
Yes, yeah.
That
we're going to talk about
lumped into one. Yeah, so I mean, yeah, it's a political move, transparently so, because this is a guy who within weeks is up for re-election, and he's trying to play both sides of the field. Yeah, yes. So you know, it's we'll see how it works out. As far as the other case, I mean, that's really interesting because the federal case, which is actually being dealt with in Florida, because that has to do with the Mar-a-Lago raid and all that stuff. The 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, which would be the court that would, you know, the man was aspirationally saying, well, they're going to, you know, issue a writ of mandamus to get her to settle down and to tell her what to do. And this writ of mandamus is essentially when a higher court reins in someone in the lower court who's obviously just gone completely off the rails.
Yeah.
So and that's what they're alleging.
Yes.
The problem is, and the reason for the hint of desperation in his in the lawyer's voice, okay, is that the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals now has a majority of Republican-appointed judges, including, I believe, six Trump appointees, six out of the total.
And that's the one they think they should appeal to?
Well, they have no choice. That's the one that has, if a writ of mandamus were to be issued, it would have to emanate from that court.
Yeah.
That's the next court above the South Florida district court in which all this drama is playing out. The judge, incidentally, is a Colombian American who apparently is also a Trump appointee, we ought to mention.
Yeah.
So this poses a real problem for the Washington, the deep state people, is that they come down to Trump country in Florida.
They're freaking out. We're going to continue this conversation right after this.
Self-reliance. It's not a phrase we hear much in our culture these days. It might conjure up images of pioneers, the West, rifles, strapping men, and strong women. But what does it mean for us in today's world? The New American Magazine has just released its latest collector's edition, Self-Reliance, Foundation of Freedom. In it, the New American authors outline the necessity of self-reliance for a free people, tips for self-reliant living, and the importance of not giving up hope. This unique edition includes articles on the self-sufficiency of the founders, preparing for a worst-case scenario, firearms, financial self-reliance, the importance of community, and many other topics by expert writers. Now, for a limited time, the New American is offering a bundle of three collector's editions, Self-Reliance, The Great Reset, and Trump World, for just $19.95. A great stocking stuffer, available at shopjbs.org. Visit shopjbs.org today.
All right, folks, we're back. So it seems weird that, to me, to the regular person, and I'm probably the most regular out of all you guys here, what happens is when something happens that
we hope you're not irregular.
Right. It seems like what's happening here is that this is going in a direction that they don't like. They think it's nutty, and all of a sudden, there's trying to add illegitimacy to this judge. But that's just justice, isn't it? I mean, they obviously just want everything to go their way, and it doesn't look like that's necessarily going so far.
Well, I mean, you know, Jack Smith's case in particular. I mean, this whole federal thing that started with the Mar-a-Lago raid by the FBI is being played out in Trump country in the Deep South, as we mentioned, in the previous segment. The 11th Circuit Court of Appeals covers Florida, Alabama, that whole area, which is Trump country as well.
Yeah.
As we mentioned, Trump appointees dominate that court at this point, so it is highly unlikely that they're going to, in my view, obviously a real legal eagle might opine otherwise, but in my view, it's relatively unlikely that that court is going to try to ride herd on the judge in the South Florida court who is also a Trump appointee.
Right.
And cannot fail to be swayed by that to a certain degree, because if she's a Trump appointee, that means she's probably at least a reasonable approximation of a constitutionalist and a conservative. She's not an activist judge.
What is she doing that's so wrong? I mean, the Presidential Records Act is a legitimate act, right?
Absolutely.
Legitimate law.
Apparently, and we have only the likes of the MSNBC so-called pundits to vouch for this. I genuinely don't know if this is in fact true, and perhaps it is, but this is somewhat unprecedented that she has instructed the lawyers on both sides of the case to consider you need to present as part of the instructions to the jury, if this thing goes to trial, instructions about the Presidential Records Act and what that means for presidential immunity, which of course is the whole basis for the defense's case.
What is so nutty about that?
So of course, the mainstream media myrmidons and the deep state are flabbergasted and aghast that this would happen, because of course that seriously threatens their case. And a number of stories that have been emanating from the news media the last couple of days since she issued these instructions, I believe it was on Monday, mm-hmm. have been to the effect of, wow, if this is allowed to stand, if the writ of mandamus doesn't come through
yeah.
from the 11th Circuit Court, that could result in the whole case being thrown out.
Right, right.
There's the whole case right there. If Trump enjoys presidential immunity, as every other president prior to him has enjoyed
right.
with regard to documents that he himself produced as president, okay.
And he declassified him, did he not? Well, or not all of them.
I mean, it's not clear, but the point is that he has ultimate authority to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I mean, every president since the beginning has typically left with lots and lots of documents that they created, classified and otherwise, declassified them as an afterthought yeah. or some such, so they could add them to their presidential library and all of this kind of thing. Okay, this is standard practice. But the buck truly stops with the president of the United States. And to say after the fact, oh, you took these documents that you created, whose status you were ultimately in charge of,
yeah.
but now we're going to say they were classified and you have no right to have them. And not only that, you know, despite the fact that you have cooperated, you know, you put them in a secure facility at the direction of, I guess, the FBI within Mar-a-Lago. They didn't just leave them well, lying around in the garage or something like that.
By the vet.
You know.
By the Chinese.
Right. And much is being made of the fact that Trump, being a pugnacious character who does not let people roll over him, didn't just say, oh, gee, you're right. Sorry. Begging your humble pardon. Here, they're all you just give them back.
Well, that's one of the.
He didn't do that.
No. That's one of the arguments they make is that he didn't comply.
He didn't cooperate, whereas Biden's been cooperative. Sure.
Yeah. So that's something that they're using against him. But I wonder if we're watching in real time that all of this fall apart. I got to say, I was always, and to some degree, I'm still more pessimistic than optimistic that all these things, one of them's bound to get them. But it seems like we're watching in real time, and me and you, Steve, especially, but we've all been reporting with each every case. Is it possible that these, by November, these will all fall apart or nothing will throw that, will end up derailing the Trump train? What do you think, Gary?
I think it's realistically yeah. possible.
You're a naturally optimistic guy. Let's yes. hear from Gary.
But as we, you know, as we've said on the show previously, multiple occasions, that even if Trump were put in jail, let's say it gets to that point,
yeah.
I don't think that would stop people from voting for him. I don't think that would stop him from becoming president. But one way of looking at this is that these perhaps are indications of how desperate the deep state is. The fact that they would proceed with all these proceedings based on essentially nothing. Isn't that a sign of desperation?
Well, it's a sign that they're so confident that they've captured all the institutions or most of the institutions that they could just go through. And this is a sign that there's some holes in their little armor.
But they
there.
May fear Trump becoming president to the extent that they'll do anything possible to prevent that from happening. So, you know, really, if you look at it in a surface way, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, does it? Because there really is no substance to these proceedings, to these charges.
If you look at it through the lens of the fact that they are so corrupt, it all makes sense. Right, Steve?
Well, I mean, if I'm given to understand that of all the panoply of charges, state, federal, local, that have been leveled against Trump, the wisdom is that in some respects, the most dangerous are the charges in Fulton County, Georgia, because of what we talked about before, the fact that Trump ultimately can't be pardoned by the governor. It can't be appealed to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Okay, that case is falling apart. And then of all of the possible charges that might possess a scintilla of merit, there's apparently one charge involved in the Florida thing where a lot of people who are, you know, even like Alan Dershowitz, who has defended Trump in the past, have said, well, this one, you know, if they really push it, they might get something on him.
This is the documents case.
Yeah, right? Related to the documents case, and that has to do specifically with his alleged, telling one of the reporters, I think, something like, you know, I know they're classified, don't tell anyone or something like that. Words to that effect, that's the only thing, even though it's really not very much in and of itself, it's still something that if they really pushed, they might get it. And that's the other, you know, set of charges that's apparently now in very real danger from the point of view of the deep state desperados, right? Of just falling apart. Yeah, being dismissed. Well, I mean, if they dismiss one, they might dismiss the whole thing.
Wow.
Because the issue of presidential immunity, which is what they're desperately trying to keep off the table with regard to the federal cases, that is the weak reed on which everything else depends. Take that away and you got nothing.
Yeah.
No matter what he may or may not have said to someone without clearance who was in the room with him, or, you know, I guess it was when he supposedly showed someone briefly and said, yeah, these are classified, but I can't let you see them, or mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah.
And apparently that, if that were proven, that could prove his undoing.
Yeah.
Obviously, that and much more have yet to prove the undoing of President Biden, but we'll leaving that aside. So, I mean, that's kind of... These are the two critical cases.
Wait a minute and a half. This Fannie Willis deal, that was unexpected, but is a good sign for the Trump camp there. What would be the next step if this continues on a pro-Trump trajectory? When a higher court picks it up in Georgia and dismisses it or looks at to dismiss it, is that what may be the next step?
Well, there are a number of things that can happen in Georgia. One is the state legislature is now looking seriously at the whole thing.
The legislature?
They've kind of had it. Yeah, they've had it with Fannie right. Willis. Depending on what will happen, obviously, they're now going to appeal it. Some legal experts, again, most of them on the likes of MSNBC and CNN are saying, and I think it's probably aspirational, oh, well, you know, very high standard, you know, because the judge has already shown why this whole thing is ridiculous, and he spelled it out, it was a wonderful decision, and so even though he's allowed the appeal, it's very unlikely that anything is going to change. That may be. Even if that's true, it's still the fact that the Georgia legislature is now involved, and
that's a good sign.
It's getting so outrageous.
They got rational people there.
Well, yeah, it's also controlled by the GOP. A lot of Trump supporters there. So even if the hands of the governor, who's not particularly friendly with Trump anyway, but even if the hands of the governor are tied, the legislature is in high dudgeon. So
yeah.
that could bring about some change.
Okay. Well, I think we covered that pretty well. Thank you, guys. After this, we're going to talk about what you can do to help restore America.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The Declaration of Independence proclaims God-given rights, and we intend to protect them. Working with people like you for over 50 years, preserving freedom and building a better tomorrow. Safeguarding the Constitution by limiting government power. We are restoring liberties, educating voters, and leading the freedom movement. Join with us. United, we will defend our rights. We are all Americans. We are the John Birch Society.
All right, folks. So, with all this news that we report, and so much of it so grim, and or at least seemingly grim, depending on how you look at it, I think Gary has, like I said, he has this Pollyannish outlook, and hopefully he's right.
Well, I actually think I have a realistic outlook.
Well, that's good. I hope so. I like to think I'm a little...
Because really, that's what we should be. We should not go too far in the direction of optimism or pessimism.
Yeah.
We should be realists. But realism tells me that if the deep state had everything sold up, they had complete control, they would just declare martial law.
Yeah.
They would say, okay, no more elections.
Yeah.
And they would arrest all of the
dissident.
The enemies of the state.
Sure.
People they deem to be enemies of the state. And, of course, they are moving that direction. They have done some of that with the January Sixers. But but the fact that we can still have a program such as this, the fact that the American people still possess the constitutional protected right to keep and bear arms, the fact that we still have local police departments, the fact that they have to lie and deceive, and of course the court proceedings that we were talking about is part of this too, the fact that they have to do this based on basically nothing, I think shows that they're running scared, and we should realize that.
Well, I don't know if they're running scared, but I do believe, I agree with obviously everything you said, because those things are true. We still have a lot of those rights. We still have a lot of those abilities to do this show. And I do believe, I mean, me and Steve were talking yesterday, and One thing that's really obvious as well is that they have lost the public opinion battle. Now, but the problem is, and I think the frustration comes, is folks listening and watching and everywhere else, you know, it's like the frustration is, it's like, great, we're there, but we don't have the institutions. We're still, you know, we're still in danger of losing the election in November because we know it's rigged. Those are things that... And they continue to perpetuate their corruption. They continue to get away with it. And so we want to talk about, it's like, you have to get involved. You have to do it. And it's like, what does that mean? I'm going to start off and I'm going to say the election issue. I interviewed Dr. David Clements last Friday. And, you know, he said things like, well, they are all rigged. But he also said that doesn't mean that the outcome, the true outcome, is not reflected in many of the elections. And he said we have to overwhelm the system in November. Then yesterday, I also talked to Wisconsin State Legislator Ty Bodden. And he was talking about how possibly the Supreme Court here in Wisconsin is going to allow drop boxes again. And then he mentioned, he's like, but that doesn't mean that municipalities, that whether cities or counties, can't prohibit them. So there's an opportunity. And then he said something that I don't know if he was prescribing, but he was just saying, look, I'll camp out by ballot boxes all night if I have to. And that's something that is also happening. We have to do whatever it takes within obviously legal parameters to make sure that these elections go the way that is true. I think if they were anywhere close to just, to fair, we would win. The Republicans would win, take the House or whatever. But that, we know that's not the case. But that doesn't mean we can't win. So I wanted to emphasize elections. Steve, I'll let you go next, and then we'll go to Gary as far as any prescription that you have as far as for getting involved. Or
I think you've said it, and I would propose we could use a different word, a different P word, other than Pollyanna-ish, which has sort of a negative. We could say Panglossian,
okay,
right? Which has the same meaning, but more in a positive sense. You know, yes. So Pangloss was this.
Why don't you define that for us?
Well, Pangloss was a character in Candide from Voltaire's Candide, who in Voltaire's, you know, consistent with Voltaire's love of mockery of Leibniz, the philosopher Leibniz, you know, believed that we lived, you know, in the best of all possible worlds. So the term Panglossian has come down to us. And I may be not Panglossian, but we do need to be optimistic. And there are grounds, you know, ample grounds for optimism, as we've discussed. However, this year is going to be a year of taking stock, okay, of getting data and seeing just how things stand, because I mean the polls are crystal clear right now, and if they haven't changed much by late October, if something similar to what happened in 2020 happens this year, you know, Biden's reelected, key states shut down their polls more or less in unison at 2 a.m. and then start again the next morning, and all lo and behold, all the votes are suddenly for Biden. All that nonsense is repeated. Then we have a real problem.
Well, we have a real problem.
Frankly, I mean, this is not so much my bailiwick. There are people out there that are following the election reform efforts at voter reform in these different states, you know, particularly, of course, the key states, Arizona, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and so Georgia and so forth. I don't know where it stands. I mean, the polls are pretty clear.
Yeah, for now, but they're making a dent, because all of a sudden you can see the pre-programming already.
It's just one other thing is what Gary said earlier remains true. The fact that we still have the freedom to create a show like this and to write and publish the things that we write and publish online and in the magazine and obviously in the John.
Your
Berg
prescription is education, also, right?
Well, I mean, that's
the first step.
That's the sine qua non, really. Without education, we're not going to change. And it's clear. So I would say, number one, our condition is very bad right now because such a large proportion of the electorate is so poorly informed.
Mm-hmm.
So that you know, we need to not deceive ourselves and say, oh, you know, prosperity is just around the corner, as it were. You know, and there are Pollyannish, Panglossian types.
Yeah.
On the internet, who would say, well, victory is upon us. We're here. We've won. And you know, I'm not going to mention any names, but I can think of a few that come across. And clearly, it's not that. Second, you know, we often speak of the ship of state, and that's probably an apt analogy, because anyone who's ever been on any kind of large boat knows that you can't turn it on a dime.
Right.
You know, to course correction takes quite a while. Were that not the case, you know, the Titanic would have never struck the iceberg. I mean, they knew the iceberg was coming, but they couldn't correct course in time to avoid hitting it. So, I mean, the question is, you know, I think the evidence is we are changing course.
It's not fast enough, though.
But is it fast enough to avoid collision with the iceberg?
Yeah, it needs to be faster.
It needs to be faster. We're in a tricky situation because the long-term changes that we need are going to take a long time so then we can have this lasting prosperity and liberty, restoring and then having lasting. But in the meantime, like we've been emphasizing, Gary, we have till November we have to get some sort of power back, because if we don't, I think everyone agrees, and it's going to be really dire.
Exactly. And to accomplish that, we need to recognize, too, that it's not all about the president. The president is the chief executive officer. He's the chief executive of the U.S. government. But more power resides in the Congress, because it is Congress that is responsible for the legislation. The Congress is the legislative branch. And so it is really important to get good congressmen.
Yeah.
And to recognize that in order to turn things around, you don't necessarily have to have a majority of constitutionalists in both the House and the Senate, because any bill to become law has to be passed by both the House and the Senate. And in fact, according to the Constitution, all money legislation must originate in the House. And we also need to keep in mind that because of our federal system of government, that the powers that the federal government itself has are few and defined, that most powers are reserved to the states and to the people.
Yeah.
And so we need to focus, too, on the states in terms of getting good legislators. And when the federal government runs amok and it tries to impose unconstitutionality, such as taking away the constitutionally protected right to keep and bear arms, then it's up to the state legislators, who also take an oath to the Constitution, to say, we are not going to do this because this is a violation of the Constitution.
Yeah.
And this will not apply within our state boundaries.
So we need to show up in November.
Exactly.
And in the meantime, we need to educate. Now, with a few seconds left, we have an amazing, amazing tool for that. And that is the Freedom Index, the Congressional Scorecard. You can go on there. You can see, especially if they've run before or they're running again, you can see the records of these folks, and you know, it'll help you make a decision when you vote. But I mean, it sounds like we all agree we need to get involved and we need to continue educating, and we need to make something happen by November. But at the same time, there's a long-term plan because we need to restore and then perpetuate that restoration and that status of liberty and prosperity. So thank you, guys. Go to jbs.org. We have a lot of information there under Take Action and whatnot, and you can get some more of that. Thank you for everyone for tuning in to the New American Daily. Remember to visit thenewamerican.com for more Truth Behind the News, and we will see you tomorrow.